Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey guys, welcome to Kindled. I'm your host, Haley, and today I'm going to be chatting with my friend, Jamie Sumner. We're going to be talking about life as a special needs mom, but even deeper than that, even if you are not a special needs mom, we're going to be talking about the hope that we can have in Christ, even when the needs of our children feel bigger than we can handle. I think that all of us can relate to that. Before I get into today's interview, though, I have a few housekeeping items. As I explained last week, we have 3 more weeks. After today, we have 3 more weeks of this mini series on family. Next week, we'll be hearing from Jim and Lynn Jackson on the topic of parenting. We're going to be talking about discipline strategies and just how to parent well. So that's a great episode. After that, September McCarthy on the glories of motherhood, and then Glenna Marshall on the topic of everyday faithfulness. And then after that, we have the much anticipated series, Christianity and Culture, which will be taking us through the rest of the year, the rest of 2020, God willing. So that series is going to be larger, and it's going to have topics covering a biblical and a secular worldview on all of these topics. We're going to have God and man, law, sin and brokenness, truth, apologetics, politics, parenting and family, fear of God and holy courage, sexuality and gender, belonging and friendship, suffering and trials. I mean, this is going to be amazing. I'm so, so excited for this series, and I know you guys are going to love it. So that's what we have coming up for the rest of this year. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was that I am accepting sponsors for that series. So if you have a small business or a service that you provide that you would like to get out to this audience of Kindled women and Kindled listeners, I would love to see if it would be a good fit and see about partnering with you to sponsor an episode or several episodes over this coming fall. The sponsorship is actually relatively affordable compared to a lot of traditional advertising and even social media advertising. I would be happy to send you my media kit and pricing if you want to take a look and just see if it's something that would be a good fit for you. And that has all of the demographic information on this audience as far as age, gender, work status, how they respond when they hear ads, whether they look for more information. Stuff that you would want to know if you're looking to advertise on Kindled. So I am really hoping to have this entire series sponsored. And if you are interested in doing that, please let me know. Reach out. My email is Haley@KindledPodcast.com, Haley at KindledPodcast.com, or you can DM me on Instagram at HaleyWilliams.Kindled, and I will be happy to connect with you that way as well. All right. Now for my conversation with Jamie Sumner.
Well, hello, Jamie. Welcome to Kindled.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I would love to kind of get into your story and hear about your journey as a parent of a child with special needs. But before we do that, would you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. I'm Jamie Sumner, and I am the author of the book, Eat, Sleep, Save the World, Words of Encouragement for the Special Needs Parent. And I am the mom to 3 kids. We live in Nashville. My son, Charlie, is my oldest. He's 7. And then I have 5-year-old twins, Cora and Jonas. And yeah, so I'm a mom and a writer, and that's kind of what I do. I used to be an English teacher for that. So kind of been jumping around all over the board.
Yeah, that's awesome. Why don't you kind of just walk us through your story with your son, Charlie, and tell us about what your journey has looked like this far?
Ooh, that would be like, I'll start kind of with the beginning and focus on that, because I think those in a lot of ways were the hardest years. Mm-hmm. So Charlie is my son with special needs. I actually found out there was something going on unusual before I had him in utero. I went in for, it was for my glucose test. And I wasn't supposed to have an ultrasound that day, but somehow they thought that I had one scheduled. So they brought me back and I was like, sure, because I, you know, everyone wants a little extra chance to see their kid. And so that I'd taken that, you know, sugary drink and I already felt weird. And they took me back and apparently there were things on the ultrasound that weren't measuring right. And in particular, Charlie kept sticking out his tongue. And so there were all these things that were off that I didn't realize that while I was looking at the screen, I'm like, there he is, you know? And then of course they take me to this back room and they said, the doctor will be with you shortly. And I said, well, wait, I'm not supposed to see the doctor. I just have to go get the blood draw or whatever for the test. And they're like, no, the doctor needs to speak with you. Well, that's never good. Mm-hmm. And so that resulted in a walk from the doctor's office to the hospital for basically a maternal fetal medicine emergency appointment where they did another ultrasound and they did an amnio, which is always scary that late in the game. And then they sent that off to the Mayo Clinic. And basically we got the call from the Mayo Clinic when I was at 30 weeks. And that confirmed that Charlie had something called Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome, which is an overgrowth syndrome. It affects things like the tongue, which is why he was sticking his tongue out. And it's a pituitary gland thing. And the day that I got the call, I pretty much hung up the phone and then I went into labor at 30 weeks. Wow. And I didn't know I was in labor because it was back pain and I had never been in labor before. And so I show up at the hospital finally late that night and they're like, you're having this baby now. So they like, I'm thinking I'll get a steroid shot for my back. And they said, no, you're in labor and you're having this baby now. Luckily, because this is God's providence, because we had gotten that call this morning, we didn't go to the hospital we had planned to go to. We went to the university hospital. That's where they told us to go. And so I gave birth to Charlie basically 45 minutes after I arrived at the hospital, but it was with a room full of specialists and they knew what was coming. And so they quickly whisked him away and we spent about 10 weeks in the NICU because of Charlie's enlarged tongue. He could not breathe very well. And we kept trying all these things, but then he would grow and it would get harder again for him to breathe. And so finally we came home. And Charlie had a tracheotomy, so the hole in his neck to breathe, and later got a G-tube because he wasn't eating. So, and he slept every night with a pulse oximeter measuring his oxygen and heart rate. And it was a very intensive way to enter parenting. Like, in a way, it was a blessing because I had no other experience. So, this was our normal. But it was very difficult. Every day was very scary, you know, and I had to suction out the trach hole with this machine that sounded like a lawnmower, like multiple times an hour. And then much more than that when he was sick. I mean, he ended up with RSV at one point and we were in the emergency room and prone to seizures when he was little. And so there were lots of ambulance rides. And then at age one, he was diagnosed officially with cerebral palsy, which we knew was coming, but it's still never fun to actually hear it.
Right.
But in a lot of ways, it was a blessing because then we got all these services and medical equipment and therapists and things we couldn't have gotten. And he had tongue reduction surgery at 7 months and then eventually got his trach out. So he doesn't have a trach or a G-tube anymore, which is a huge blessing. And he's actually he's my most hardy kid now. Like he never gets sick or anything when my twins bring home stuff from school, you know, he never has it, which is amazing. And so fast forward to now, he's 7, almost 8, and he uses a wheelchair to get around. He can't walk on his own. He also has a kind of looks like an iPad and it's a speaking device that he uses to communicate. He's still kind of learning that. It's not a fast process. It's pretty complicated because it's learning an entire language in this other format.
Right.
But he's getting better every day and it's amazing to see him use it. And it's funny. I don't need to use it that much with him because he and I have such a shorthand because he can speak a few words and also because he and I we can basically communicate without words. So it's funny because I often don't use it as much as his teachers do because I know Charlie and Charlie knows me and we just have this way.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah. So in a lot of ways, life now is pretty normal. Like, he goes to school every day and, you know, he has his brother, his sister. He rides horses in the afternoon as one of his therapies, which is amazing to watch. Every Thursday he does this therapeutic riding program. And it feels normal because it's a lot less scary now. Like, I'm not afraid for him in the way that I was those first 2 years of life, which really was, we were pretty much scared all the time. Like, the one time my husband went out of town when Charlie was less than a year old, I had my mom come over and my husband Jody went to a football game. And so he went out of town, and we're in Nashville, and he went to Atlanta. And that night Charlie sleeps with that monitor and it kept alarming. And it was showing his oxygen rates were low. And it was just me and my mom there, and we were terrified. And we ended up rushing him to the emergency room. They whisked him out of my arms and would not let me touch him while they were working on him, which was so scary. And because when you enter into that situation and you have a medically complex child, but the people that are taking them from you don't know his whole history, you want to be there because you want to explain where what you think is this thing is not
right,
this.
Right, right, right.
Like, this is not this, you know?
Yeah.
So scary. And that was when that of course was the RSV. And we spent, you know, a week or so in the hospital there. But so, so now luckily.
Life feels more normal. Okay. Which, like, is, I mean, for everyone, it's relative, of course. You know, you have, I'm sure you still have hard days and situations that someone like me would be like, oh my gosh, how do you do that? That looks really intense. But you're like, well, compared to where I've been, like, this is manageable.
Well, and that's the other thing. So this is something I always say to parents of kids that are typically developing, that they'll start, like, my mom friends will talk to me and they're like, oh my gosh, she was just throwing up last night. Nobody slept. And then they all stop and say, I know that's nothing compared to what you went through. And I make them stop and I say, but you know what? Everybody's hard feels just as hard to them. It's not, first of all, it's not a competition and it's not like a scale either.
Have the hardest,
like,
life. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I always want to tell other parents, like, please don't think, one, like, I'm this martyr or hero because of what we've gone through. Our heart is just our heart, and your heart is your heart. And you feel it just as much as I do, and vice versa. So that's always what I want to tell people, because I never want them to feel bad for telling me their hard stuff, you know?
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. That we're not always comparing what difficulty we're going through to someone else's more difficult situation, you know? Cause
exactly.
Of course, someone in like a third world developing country could be like, oh really, Jamie? Like, let me tell you my day. And so it just doesn't matter to compare that way.
But that would be a terrible way to live. Like to compare, like to always try to put it on a level.
Well, and God doesn't make us do that. He isn't even treating us that way. Like, he sees us in where we are at with what we've been given, and he meets us there. He doesn't meet us in someone else's difficulty. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So why would we do that to ourselves if he doesn't? So now that you kind of are in a place that feels a little more normal, or like you figured out a rhythm that works with your family, where are you seeing God's grace in this? Because I would imagine, like, those first couple years, maybe it would have, like, the grace was like just that he was still alive, and you're like, everything else felt really, really challenging. But now that you're a little bit through the woods, like, I wonder for the mom listening who's like still maybe feels like she's in that place, and maybe their kid is, you know, not as young as a 2 year old, but maybe they just still feel like they're just surviving. Like, where are you seeing God's grace today?
Well, and I think we all go through those phases. Like, I don't think it's just a gentle incline to like glorious parenthood, you know, through the stages. Like, I think there are dips for everybody.
Right.
I mean, I'm peeking ahead already towards like adolescence and just like bracing myself a little bit for what that's going to be like.
Right.
But I think for the parents that are still in the thick of it, and I don't know if this helps really, but I think for me, some of the grace I see now is the hindsight that I have to look back on what we've made it through. So, and I think that is encouragement in a way, because whatever you're going through in this moment, in this day, while you're listening to this podcast, whatever is heavy on your heart, it's like, it will pass, you know, it will lessen and it will change and you will be able to look back on it with a different feeling, at least more of a bigger picture understanding of it. And for me, that is such a huge blessing, because if you can't learn from the hard things later, then they just feel hard and they just make you bitter. You know what I mean? They just make you angry that that happened, or that you went through that, or your kids were going through that. And I think to be able to have that perspective and see where God has carried you to is huge, because it does keep your heart soft when it wants to kind of grow hard.
Yeah. Tell me about a time or a situation where you have experience that anger in your life with your situation with your kids.
Oh my gosh, there's so many.
Right. I have a lot too.
Right. Like, I would say there was this one time, and this is when Charlie was less than two. I'm not exactly sure, but he had been sick off and on, had a fever, and I had given him a bath, and I was putting his pajamas on, and he started seizing. And at first we weren't sure that's what it was, because with the CP, his legs sometimes shake when he has a fever, but it didn't stop. And so I remember kneeling on the floor, not even knowing where to put my hands on him that would be safe, and calling for Jody to call 911. And then the next thing I remember, it's firemen in our house, and they're trying to get seizure meds into him. And then there's the pop of the stretcher, and then he's out in the driveway, and then there's an ambulance, and then they won't let me sit back there. I have to sit in the front, and who's watching the twins, and where is Jody? And it was this chaotic, terrifying moment, because I could not get to my son, and all parts of my life were spinning out. Mm-hmm. And we rode to the hospital, and they didn't know why this one seizure wouldn't stop. And they did a spinal tap, and they hooked him up to the EEG, you know, with the probes on his head. And we had to wait for days to see what that would look like. And I remember being so angry, because we had just gotten through the hardest parts, it felt like, the scariest parts, and then and just started to settle into a normal. And then this happens. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was PTSD. It was like I was thrown back into this feeling of uncertainty that was so horrible to have to sit back in when we had just climbed out of it. But again, the perspective, it ended up that these seizures that he was having when he was young, and he ended up going on seizure meds and staying on those until he was, I think, five, just in case. But they ended up being the febrile seizures, which are the fever-induced seizures, which actually a lot of children get. It was probably related to the CP, but the bigger thing, he grew out of them. He grew out of the seizures. And I look back now and I think, oh my gosh, I am so grateful that those medics were so fast to our house, and that we had this team working with Charlie that were, when we got to the hospital and got situated, that were familiar with him, because we went to the same hospital that he was born in. And the fact that we got to celebrate when he got off his seizure meds, like we got to, like, if you had told me in that moment of anger that one day there would be an equal measure of joy when he got to stop taking those meds, I would not have believed it. I would not have believed that my heart could have picked itself up after that feeling. And the fact that it did is just proof that God is taking care of us, even if we don't feel it in the moment, even if we don't want to hear it. Like, our pastor came that night to pray with us in the hospital. And I remember, I think it was shock too, but I remember not even being able to listen. Like, he had his hands on us, and I literally couldn't even focus. I couldn't even listen to the prayer because my head was, and my heart were just spinning. But then, you know, flash forward, and my head and my heart are spinning for a different reason. And it's beautiful. Like, I am so grateful for every day that he doesn't have to take any medicine, and that I don't have to fear that. And that he and then again, like I said, he's the kid that never gets sick now. Like, it's just, you know?
Yeah.
You just crazy. Can't guess.
I love what you said about just that you would have never guessed you would have had an equal measure of joy to the pain that you had felt and experienced. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine there's a lot of people listening who are like, I don't know if I can even believe that that is possible.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I wouldn't have.
Right. Like you in that place were like, you probably would have scoffed at that and been like, mm-hmm. there's just no way you don't understand what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. But, and I didn't tell you this, but I always go deep here on Kindled. So I'd love for you, because I think that this is where this is headed, is like to kind of tie in, how does the gospel impact your story and your life and Charlie's life, and how has it freed you? Because I feel like there's just a tie in here with the hope that we have because of Jesus and, mm-hmm. you know, and that you didn't stay stuck, even though you wouldn't have believed that you wouldn't stay stuck
yeah.
in that place. Yeah. How have you seen that thread, you know, kind of work its way through your story?
Well, so Eat, Sleep, Save the World, one of the things that I do in the book, it's basically my story separated into different parts, different character traits that I see demonstrated in parents of kids with special needs that they probably don't even recognize in themselves, like resilience and determination and thankfulness and all these things that you may not feel in the moment that you see later, like you see it in your own life. Mm-hmm. And each of those parts is our story, but it's also paired with scripture. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I always go to in the gospel, and it's funny because this sounds like not being present in the moment, but that's not what it is. So I think about where we are promised that like these tears one day will be dried and the lame will be healed, mm-hmm. you know, like literally my son who cannot walk is going to run, like, and I'm going to get, you're going to make me cry, and yeah. I'm going to get to see it. Like that to me is something that, like all these other examples that I've talked about, like of it being really hard and then seeing that joy, it's like those are just little pictures of what it's going to be like exponentially when we get to heaven and we get to see it complete, like no yeah. more of the dips. Like it's just, we're there and we're perfect and Charlie is perfect and he'll be able to tell me with his own sweet voice all the things that he wants to tell me.
Right. Oh, so good. It's so true. And I, like you said, it isn't that you're not living in the moment by having that eternal perspective, because that is like, if we weren't supposed to think that way, then God wouldn't have put it in scripture. You know, he wants us to see his intention for us and his desire for us as wholeness and, like you said, perfection and completion, not brokenness and, you know, in disease and the things that sin has happened, you know, has caused to be possible in the world. He wants us to be able to remember that this is what you're destined for and this is where you're bound for, you know, and yet, mm-hmm. yet it doesn't make us not live in the moment. I think what it does is enable us to persevere, you know, and yeah. to, like you say, like to be resilient and to keep going and to say, okay, one more day.
Yeah. And to live more hopefully in the moment and not let it sink you, you know, yeah. not let the feelings of fear and anger and all of those other things sink you, like not just resilience, but also the hope that comes after that. You bounce back and then you have hope. Because there is something to look forward to.
Yep. Yeah. Because imagine, like, for the people who don't have this eternal hope, how do they even, that's what always gets me, is how do people who aren't believers and don't have the hope that we have in Christ, like, how do they even face hard things? That's what's actually amazing.
You know what it feels like? It feels like to live that way would be to live in a boat on the ocean without any sail or any way to steer. You are literally just at the mercy of the waves that come at you.
Yeah.
And it's like you're just literally sailing through life trying to survive.
Right.
Day, you know, and it just feels, I don't know, I would, that would be exhausting. And not that we don't do that. I mean, we do that too. That's why we have to continually go back to scripture and God's promises and talk to people who can give perspective, because we all, that's our inclination, is to go back to that, is to just kind of enter survival mode and just keep on trucking.
Right.
But luckily we have reminders of something else.
Yes.
Are you a female entrepreneur with a small or budding business? Would you describe your online presence as lackluster at best? Well, girl, you're in luck, because you're who I work with, and making people shine online is what I do. This podcast is my passion, but in my day-to-day work, I am actually a web and graphic designer. I specialize in working with small businesses run by female entrepreneurs. Why? Because I am one of you, so I just get you. I get how you want to show up online as stellar and amazing as you do in person already. You want a system for growing your email list, converting traffic into customers, and most of all, you just want someone you can trust to execute all of that without a million redos or false starts. I know how hard it is to trust someone with your brand that feels kind of like one of your own children, but if you want to chat about your business's website or digital presence, I'm your girl. Email me at Haley@kindledpodcast.com or check out my web design website at hwilliamscreative.com.
When you were talking about just fast forward to glory and heaven and perfection, I don't know if you've read C.S. Lewis's book, The Great Divorce. Yeah, it was just coming back to me how he describes, for anyone who has not read it, you need to read it. You can't even listen to another episode until you do.
But it's short. It's real short.
It is super short. Yeah. But he describes, like, the concept is that this bus of people from, is it like the underworld, sort of, like, I don't know if they're from hell or not.
It's
they're
sort of
like middle place.
Purgatory.
Yeah.
Ish. Yeah. Although we kind of just spoiled the ending.
I know.
That's okay.
Well, not totally. Yeah. So they visit heaven, and anyways, they're basically ghosts compared to what is in heaven. Like, they are so insubstantial that the blades of grass stab their feet. The heavenly blades of grass are so heavy and thick and weighty and so much more substantial than they are that they can't even walk on the grass. It's painful for them. And the water is like undrinkable, because it's just like they're ghosts, they're spirits. And so everything is just beyond what they could even handle physically.
It's sensory stimulus overload, basically.
Right. And just the way he explains this and describes it, it's like, it helps me to put into perspective the difficulties that I'm facing here. Like, granted, this is not purgatory, like we live on the earth, and purgatory is not a biblical idea. But the idea that, you know, what we're facing in this physical world, it will just not compare. It will not compare with the glory that is to be revealed, like the Bible says. And again, it's like, I don't want anyone to feel like you or I would be minimizing what you're going through, because I know people are going through unthinkable difficulties.
Yes. The world can be a very hard place.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you can compare that to what will be, and realize that that is reality. Like, this is the shadow, you know, this is the, in a sense, this is the spirit world, and that's reality. You know what I'm saying? And so, that helps me.
Isn't that great? Well, and I would say this too. I think that the reason that book is so great is that the pat thing that people used to say to us that I did not enjoy when we were in the thick of it with Charlie was, all this will be made new in heaven. And it was kind of like people got uncomfortable, and then they ended with that. And it felt like such a pat answer that it kind of made me upset. Right. Not upset at them, but just like, I mean, yes, but here I am, you know? And I would say the thing that helped me get past that when we were in the hardest parts, when I was literally just sitting in it, was to let myself feel all those other feelings too. Like, God is okay with me when I'm angry and bitter and have lost hope, because I'm human and he gets that. And Jesus was human. And I mean, he came to earth to experience these things, and he felt all the things we felt. He did. And so I think that you do have to let yourself feel all those other emotions too, and not feel guilty that you can't just hop across the stones to the other side and be like all joy, joy, joy.
Right.
I think it is important that you go through those other emotions too, because they're necessary and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to deny. And I interviewed Christy Straub about her book, What Am I Feeling? And there's a line, it's a children's book actually. And there's a line that says, a feeling is just a feeling or something, but it doesn't get to control you. It doesn't get to control me. So it's like, it helps kids understand like, yeah, your feeling is real and it's there and it's okay to feel it. And it's not wrong to feel it, but it doesn't get to be in charge of you. You know, it doesn't get to tell you what you are or what to do or how to be or any of those things. It doesn't have that level of authority really. And so, and to like validate, like I am feeling all these things, but that is not my identity. You know, I don't have to live there.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I tell my kids that all the time. Like, cause they'll be like, he made me angry. And so I did this, you know, and I said, well, you know, first of all, you felt angry, but it's still you're still in control of your emotions. No one else can make you feel anything. Right. And secondly, you don't have to give in to those emotions.
Right.
And then we will sit there and count to 10 and then talk about how do you still feel that way? And see that emotion that felt so strong lasted 10 seconds or less. You know, and we talk about it because and it's so good for me too. Cause I'm like, okay, I need to count to 10 more often.
Yeah, I should. I really need to, be reminded of that in the moment. Cause emotions, they do feel like they can
forever. They feel forever.
It feels like I am justified because this is how I'm feeling and we're not, you know, but it's also freeing to know that we're not like, I don't have to be controlled by that, like that sadness or that anger or that resentment or whatever it is, like because of the gospel, because Jesus has made a way for me to be free and to be truly free. Those things don't have power over me. So practically speaking, you talk a lot about the kind of the ins and outs and like situations that you've come through with your family and your son, Charlie, like in the book. So people can read the book to get all of that. But I would love to know just maybe, you know, from a practical standpoint, how have you as a special needs parent been able to kind of help your child succeed? And you talk about this, like, you know, knowing when to step in and help and knowing when to let go. And I would imagine that is like an ever-changing thing. But is there any sort of advice or wisdom that you could share in regards to how to help that child succeed?
Well, there's lots. And you're right, like it changes from day to day. And I think the biggest one for me, you actually touched on, was learning. And this was all me. This was not something that this was about me as a parent, not Charlie as a kid. I had to learn when to be his advocate, because as a special needs parent, that's always first in your mind is I've got to be his advocate. I've got to fight for services and for changes in his IEP and these insurance coverage and whatever. Literally for Charlie, I have to be his voice, you know, and there's that. And then there's the opposite of, but if I don't let him have his freedom and independence and let him struggle, then he's never going to be the independent individual that I'm fighting for him to be. So, you know, I have to be very careful in balancing that so it doesn't end up holding him back. And it's small stuff. I'll give you a very specific example. So, he has the speaking device, which I told you about. And for a very long time, there's different programs. And you kind of, as you learn one, you go to a higher level to the next one, which is more complex language. And I wasn't ready for him to go to the next level. I wasn't sure he was ready. And I was afraid if his teacher switched into that, he would just start failing everything and not being able to communicate in school. And that was a very scary feeling for me. And I was worried about him transitioning on. And then one day, and they hadn't told me he was ready or anything, but I was just anticipating that. And then one day his teacher, the special ed teacher, emailed me and said, I think he might be ready. And I just sat and stared at it for a long time. And I'm like, okay, God, do we do this and risk potential failure and then back, and then he gets frustrated because he can't communicate?
Right.
Or do we stay where we are and just feel safe? And it took a lot of prayer. And then, you know, I said, okay, let's go for it. And not only did he do it, but he told her through using his device that he wanted to skip two levels. So, and he awesome. Did. And the crazy part is he did, and he's doing it. And if I had said, let's hold off, you know, then he would be not able to express himself like he can now, yeah. which is just, mm-hmm. so it's one of those things where my advice is you just have to remain prayerful in when to step in and when to not. And I think that's true of any parent. Like,
right.
when do you let your kids sort it out as they're fighting or on the playground, or mm-hmm. when to let them start managing their homework and not hover, and, you know,
yeah,
it's just a constant rereading of the situation, I think.
Yeah, I feel like everything you said, like, although my context is different, I can relate with all of it, and, you know, and find my own little situations where I'm like, yeah, I probably need to stop micromanaging you here and just let mm-hmm. you mess up a little bit and then correct you or redirect you or whatever, and stop trying to, like, I mean, for me, it's a control issue. Like, stop trying to kind of manufacture the outcome that I want every single time and make sure that everything is perfect and nobody ever misses a nap or misses a this or that, whatever.
Right.
Just being kind of so tightly wound around the outcome. And that kind of leads me into my next question is, like, how can a mom without a special needs kid help, or not even help, but be a better friend to, you know, a friend that she has that does have a kid with special needs? Because I think that's a hard place to know, like, well, what can I do, or what should I say, or how do I meet you, or how do I say the right thing and not say the wrong thing, and am I going to offend you, or, you know, that's just a challenging, I mean, it may not be if you've had that friend for a long time, but I think it can be challenging to step into those relationships and really know, you know, what's the best way to go about it.
Right. I think the biggest thing, and this is more like, yeah, like you said, not someone that's super close to you, but more like acquaintance friends. Mm-hmm. I would say the biggest thing, like you said, like, what do I say? I don't want to say the wrong thing, or what's the right thing to say? And that is the one thing that I always lean into, because I always want to tell people, honestly, the quote unquote wrong thing would be to just smile politely and keep walking and not lean in because you're worried about saying the wrong thing. And that happens a lot. It's like you see someone who's different from you and it makes you uncomfortable. And so you, like, up pops the, like, politeness front, and then you never get deeper. You know what
I
mean?
Right, right.
And it can be different in any way that makes you uncomfortable. And so I always say, please don't be afraid to be rude or ask a dumb question to me, because if you're asking me or you're talking to Charlie, and even though you feel like the conversation isn't going well or it's awkward, like, it's a conversation and it's us engaging with one another. And the point of it is not to have this perfect exchange. The point is to just acknowledge each other and lean into each other's worlds for a little bit.
Yeah, that's really
good. And that's what we want. We just want to be seen. Like, I just want people to see Charlie and to be willing to just feel awkward and talk to him and let him try to use his speaking device with them and let their kids ask him questions that, like, you're like, it's like, you know, the kid in the grocery store that's like, that lady's fat, or I like, my son Jonas always goes, I like old people. Like, he walks up to any person that looks, has gray hair, and he says, hi, I like you because I like old people.
Oh, cool.
You know? And it's one of these things that it's like, you know what? Great, because that's honest and you're having a conversation, and there you go. You know, like, that old people analogy is kind of coming true in our special needs life, because, like, we want people to come up to us and ask about his wheels or his speaking device or whatever.
Yes. Kelly Stuckey, whose son has dwarfism, has said the same thing. I've seen her say this on Instagram, and I've interviewed her as well. And she said she just wants people to ask, like, so, like, you know, how old are you? So what are you learning? Like, she just wants you to ask normal questions. And and you can ask about, like, hey, so, like, why are you shorter than everybody else? Like, she wants to be asked that question, because then it gives her the authority to give the answer and, like, to be in charge of the narrative instead of letting other people's thoughts or guesses.
Correct misconceptions. Yes.
Right. Right. And just, and to normalize it even like mm-hmm. this isn't, you don't have to feel weird. It's like, we don't feel weird. Like this yeah. is our life. Like, and so
bring it on.
Yeah. I think that's just good for everyone listening to hear. And it's like, when we hear that, it's like, oh yeah, duh. Like why would I think anything else would be the right way? But when you're not faced with that situation on a regular basis, like you can almost be like deer in the headlights, like, oh no, I don't want to say the wrong thing or the right thing.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that's really helpful for people to hear, to just kind of lean in maybe as a general encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing I want to ask you too practically about is like, how have you dealt with your son with negative attention, you know, and handling those situations? And I'm sure obviously every parent deals with that in some way, shape or form, but how have you faced those types of situations?
I think so. I have not always handled it well. You know, it was a learning curve because Charlie does draw stares and things. And especially when he was younger and he still had the big tongue and he still had the trach and we were very obviously different. And I think my answer, like we've had, you know, kids at the grocery store, like looking and then like laughing at Charlie and things like this. And then in that instance, like the mom did not step in. She pretended like it wasn't happening.
Oh, wow.
Which was hard. And again, it goes back to that. Like she was embarrassed or she didn't know what to do. I don't know. But in that instance, like I always try to engage the person. And so that Charlie becomes not almost like an object to look at, but an actual human. So Charlie can say hi and he can wave and things. And so I'm always like, Charlie, can you say hi to whoever it is, whether they're staring or maybe they're laughing or whatever it is, if they're clearly like observing us. And he will, and he'll wave. And then it almost like breaks the moment in a way that like my anger or a lecture from me is not going to do it. Like,
yeah,
that is going to create more distance. But like to approach what could be indifference or even bullying with friendliness, to go back at it with, I'm going to choose to see good intentions here when there may not be. And we're going to treat this like a situation that is going to end positively. Like I just have to march into it like that, because if I don't, and then I meet their attitude with my own bad attitude, it never works out well, because then everybody's on the defensive. And then how does that ever end well? You know, it is so hard. I'll tell you, like, if I'm not in a good emotional place, if I'm extra stressed or whatever, and that occurs, it's so much harder to pull it back around and be positive in the situation. But it's happened enough, not like it happens all the time, but it's happened enough that I've had practice. And so I feel like, okay, I know how this is going to end if I do one thing. And then I've seen how it will end if I choose the other better option. And so that for us has been the biggest thing, is just approaching it with positivity and not hitting a negative with a negative.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. It's very helpful to humanize him, you know, and remind them that he is a human. Like, it's not an object.
I think that happens all the time. People are treated like objects all the time in various ways, especially now with social media. It's really easy to distance yourself from people because you can say whatever you want and there aren't any repercussions, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a skill we all have to relearn, is how to remember that everybody, even this person that's this tiny icon on your screen, is still a person, you know?
Yeah.
And to be considerate of that, of everyone's humanity, in a way that like it's really easy not to now.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do you have any kind of overarching like wisdom from your years of being on this journey with Charlie and your kids and your whole family for the woman listening who is maybe a few steps behind you? Like, what would your advice or wisdom be? And that's like a huge question, but
I'm thinking
your takeaway is, I guess.
I'm thinking, because there's so many little bits of wisdom. Well, okay, I would say this. This is my, because I always hate wisdom that's like a wisdom that's secretly disguised, a how-to, like, advice. Mm-hmm. So, because that always feels like I don't want an instruction list. So this is what I would say. I would say, the special needs. So there's, you know, there's the whole mom guilt. Like there's always something that you feel like, oh, I shouldn't have raised my voice then, or I shouldn't mm-hmm. have done this, or I need to be more patient at dinner, or we've got to stop eating takeout for dinner. You know, mm-hmm. whatever the thing is with special needs parents, it's magnified because your children need so much more from you. Mm-hmm. So what you feel like you should be doing feels so much more. But you feel like there's always something that you're not tackling or that you're not doing well enough as their parent. And the thing I would say is remember that God designed you specifically to be the parent to your child. And He has graced you with gifts that nobody else could bring to that relationship, that you can take care of your child in your own unique way. And so whenever you feel inadequate, know that God doesn't think you are as a parent.
Yeah.
And that's a really hard thing to remember in the moment, but God designed you to be this child's mother, and nobody else could do that job but you. And so let yourself feel a little less of that guilt and mm-hmm. remember that God thinks you can do this.
Oh, that's such good advice. That's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah. I tell myself that. I have to tell myself that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, anyone listening, I think, could find hope in that reminder. So where can people stay connected with you online and find out more about your book?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a website, and it's Jamie, Jamie-Sumner.com. And so all my stuff is on there. I Eat, Sleep, Save the World is on there. And it's also everywhere books are sold, and Amazon and Lifeway and Barnes and Noble and all those places. So awesome. I'll be around.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I found it really encouraging and just beautiful the way that you're growing and learning more about God through this and able to kind of reorient your perspective to eternity. So thanks for sharing that.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you guys so much. That's all I have for you today. Don't forget to leave a review on Kindled if you enjoy listening and if you've benefited from this show at all in any way. I would love to hear from you and hear your feedback. I always accept constructive criticism as well. Feel free to email me anytime at Haley@kindledpodcast.com. I can't respond to every email I get, but I will definitely do my best. And I do read every single review that is submitted. So appreciate you guys so much. I'll see you on Instagram this week. And yeah, talk to you next Monday. Bye.